Hope you'll open your Bibles to Psalm 39 as we read along together tonight. Psalm 39. The date of writing of this psalm is unknown. And by the way, I appreciate Jeremy for leading that last song. He doesn't know it, but the other two fit perfectly as well. It's very helpful to prepare for a study when the songs are in tune with the text of the message, and so that's really great. Psalm 39, again, we do not know exactly when it was written. Some said they thought it was written early in David's life when he was running from Saul and running from Absalom and undergoing some of the difficulties early in his kingdom or before he was in the kingdom. But the reality is that at the end of this psalm, we find that David is still confessing that he has sinned and that he is being punished for sin. It follows contextually with the Psalm 38 that we studied last week. And so Psalm 39 was more likely written around the middle of David's life or toward the end of his life because of that fact, because he acknowledges that he has sinned before God and that he's not going to live a long time, but even though he's going to ask how long it will be. So we really don't know the date of writing, but the psalm is ascribed to David. And going back and looking at all of the comments about the ancient manuscripts, there's no one that really denies this. Everyone has agreed on the authorship of David, and that's helpful because knowing the kind of person that David was will help us to understand a little bit better what he's trying to say. We're going to break this down into three sections tonight. The first one is going to be precaution. Precaution. That will be verses 1 through 5. So let's read those and observe what he said. David writes, I said, I will take heed to my ways, that I sin not with my tongue. I will keep my mouth with a bridle while the wicked is before me. I was dumb with silence. I held my peace, even from good, and my sorrow was stirred. My heart was hot within me. While I was musing, the fire burned. Then I spake with my tongue. Lord, make me to know mine end. And the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how frail I am. Behold, thou hast made my days as an handbreadth, and mine age is as nothing before thee. Verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. And then there is that musical pause, the word Selah, as we would pronounce it. It appears three times, or twice, at the end of verse 5, and I believe it's at the end of verse 11. Dividing this up into three sections. We're dividing it just a little bit differently, but very close. The psalmist here has become very frustrated with the condition that he's in. He's tempted to murmur and complain, but he says, there are people that are listening, and so I'm going to guard my tongue. The people that were listening, or among them, were the wicked. Those are the ones that he mentions. And so he doesn't want the wicked to hear him murmuring and complaining to God and have them think that he has lost his faith. He doesn't want his enemies to hear and to think that he is now chastising God and that he will be punished. And in doing so, then they will be victorious and they would win over him. And so David acknowledges the fact that he needed to be quiet, not to say anything good or to say anything evil, because either way, his enemies were going to mistake them. He also realized, undoubtedly, that we need to be careful what we say to God and in front of him, because God is also listening. And David understood that even though he was frustrated, and later on he will take the blame for what has happened to him, he wants to be careful that he doesn't blame God for what has happened. How many times in our lives, when we get bad news, when we go through a bad time, or when we see it happen with others, do we say or do we hear other people say, why did God do that to me? When God didn't do it to me. It was Satan who brought sin into the world. And because of that sin, sickness and death entered into the human experience. So when bad things happen to good people, it is not God causing them to happen. He may allow it to happen. He may cause some things to happen to chastise us and correct us and bring us back on the right path. Punishment, as in this case, he does do those things. But God is not the author of evil. And God does not bring evil in the sense of the transgression of a law upon his own people. And so David knew that he had to be careful what he said. And even though you can see he's saying that as he muses about these things, as he considers them, it's just all boiling up inside. He feels like he's about to explode. He wants to say something, but he's afraid that what he says will be misconstrued or misused. You know, it's right sometimes to have a righteous indignation. It's right to have question. It's right to wonder about things. But we need to be careful what we say, and we need to be careful before whom we say it. Because people can take any sign of doubt or discouragement, and they can turn it against us, or they can use it as an excuse for their own lack of faith. And so what David is doing here, he resolves to keep his thoughts to himself. He holds in his pain and his frustration. He holds it all inside. But he was wise to hold his words. You know, James says in James 1 and verse 19, "Therefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath." It's interesting that David uses the word here in verse 1, bridle. In James chapter 3, James talks about the tongue. And I'm not going to read all of it because it's verses 1 all the way through 10. Really, it's the whole chapter. But he talks about the tongue, and he talks about how that it is an evil set on fire from hell. And he talks about the tongue can no man tame. He said, we put bridles in horses' mouths, and we guide large ships with rudders, but we can't control our tongue. Well, we probably could if we've tried really hard enough, but sometimes things slip out. And eventually with David, some things are going to start to slip out also. But he realizes that he needed to bridle his tongue, but he eventually became so troubled, verses 4 and 6, that he just could not help but cry out for understanding. He did not cry out in accusatory terms toward God, but he cried out for information. He was asking a question in verse 4 there, how long will I live? How long will I live? How long will it be before I die? Will I have a chance to be relieved of this struggle that is affecting me right now? Well, that's a fair question. It's a question maybe that all of us have answered or have asked. Have you ever asked the question, how long will I live? You look at your parents and you think, well, how long did they live? How old did they get before they left this world? What about grandparents? Sometimes the numbers are quite different. But none of those things really tell us for sure how long we're going to live. We may get an idea from that, but it doesn't tell us, it doesn't prove anything. James even said, he said, why do you say tomorrow, today or tomorrow, I'm going to go in such a city and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that? For you don't know what's going to be on tomorrow. He said, but your life is, verse 14 of James 4, your life is as a vapor. It is as a vapor. The Bible describes our life as a vaporous steam that just disappears into the air. In the overall context of eternity, our life is such a short period of time. It's almost like it's here, then it disappears. It's described as a tale that is told. In other words, a story. As soon as that story has been told, we're ready to hear another one. And so the Bible tells us these things, but David is asking here, well, how long will I live? Will I have relief here before I die? That's a good question. It's a good question. It's a question that many people will ask. Solomon, in his great wisdom, Solomon was a very foolish man in allowing his wives to pull him away from God. According to 1 Kings 11, he was not saved. He was lost. But in his great wisdom, he did say this. How he could say this and then not live it, we'll never know. But he said, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole of man. If you're reading from most translations, it will say the whole duty. You'll notice that duty is in italics, and we know that means it was added by the translators for ease of understanding. But he said it's the whole of man. Fearing God and keeping his commandments, that's what our life is all about. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. So how often must we be reminded that we're not going to live forever before we make our lives right with God? Solomon also said in Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 2, he said, it is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. We went to the funeral home this afternoon for a funeral. We went to one last week. If I counted correctly, over a 10-week period, we went about 8 times, not for just for members here, but for people that affected this congregation, people in the community and people here. We've been there a lot. It reminded us that we will not live forever. And it reminds us that sometimes when we're having problems, we're going to ask maybe the same question that David did. But when we do, we need to be careful what we ask and how we ask it. You think about Job. Job lost all that he had. The Bible said, then Job arose, rent his mantle, shaved his head, and fell down upon the ground and worshiped, and said, naked came I out from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And all of this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. Who could do that? Losing all of your material possessions, losing your children, and Job could still worship the Lord and put it all in perspective and say, God gave me these children, and now he's taken them away. Well, if they were faithful children, they were taken home to be with the Lord. For them, that would have been a blessing. And Job offered sacrifices under the patriarchal age regularly for his children in the event that they had sinned, some sin against the Lord. So Job had done his part. We know that later Job was blessed by the Lord with twice of everything that he had had before because he did not charge God foolishly, because he did not lose his faith, because he didn't listen to his wife who asked, dost thou maintain thine integrity? Curse God and die. He didn't do that. David didn't do that. David wasn't going to do that. He didn't want anything he said to be misinterpreted by his enemies, by the wicked, to make it sound like he did or like he had. So let's look then at verses 6 through 8, and let's notice his perspective. Verse 6, surely every man walketh in a vain show. Surely they are disquieted in vain. He heapeth up riches and knoweth not who shall gather them. And now, Lord, what do I wait for? Deliver me from all my transgressions. Make me not the reproach of the foolish. Well, this wasn't exactly the same request that Job made, but it came from the same motivation. Job said, oh, I curse the day that I was born. Why did I have to be born? Why did I ever have to nurse? Why did I survive? If I've had to go through all of this, it would have been better if I had never even been born. Have you ever heard somebody say that? I wish I had never been born. That's a sad thing to say. But sometimes people are pushed to their limit. And sometimes in frustration, they say things that later on they won't mean. But it just tells you the depth of pain that they are enduring in the moment. I wish I had never been born. That's what Job said. But eventually he was blessed. David was not saying, I wish I had never been born. But Lord, how much longer am I going to live? Am I going to live any longer? Job chapter 6 and verse 9, chapter 7 and verse 15, chapter 14 and verse 13. Job kept asking to die. He kept asking to die because of what he was going through. Lord, if you're going to shoot me with your arrows, if you're going to put me through this much suffering, just go ahead and kill me. Do it now. Get it over with. That's not what David is asking. But it came from the same type of heart, a heart that was suffering, that was in grief, that was enduring great pain. Not tell me the day, David asks, but show me how long my life will really be. David then comes to the point where he realizes how tentative, how frail life is, how fragile is really the word I was looking for, how fragile life is. And so he's asking, Lord, am I going to continue? And all of these things that I've done, what's it worth? It's real, verse 6, it's really worth nothing. You know, in Luke chapter 12, we read about the rich farmer. And in verse 20, after the farmer said, well, what will I do? I'll just tear down my barns. I'll build bigger barns. Remember what the Lord said to him? The text reads in verse 20, "But the Lord said, Thou fool, this night shall thy soul be required of thee. Then who shall be those things which thou hast provided?" He thought he was going to live forever. David said, "I know I'm not going to live forever, but could you tell me how long it's going to be, and if I have any hope, if things are going to get better for me?" In Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 18, listen to what Solomon said. He said, "Yes, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man who shall be after me. And who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor, wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This is vanity." He goes on to talk about that brought my heart to despair. Well, Solomon had developed a really negative attitude. But he made a good point. When you look at life in general, we are to work. The Bible says, "If a man shall not work, neither let him eat." We are to work. We are to do our best. We are to share with others. That was the problem with the rich farmer. He was going to hoard it, and he was going to keep it all for himself, and he wasn't going to help others. Jesus taught in Matthew 25 that we will be judged in the judgment on the way that we have used our goods to help our brethren and to help others, Galatians 6 and verse 10. And so here we have the psalmist who has become weary of life, asking, "How long is it going to last?" And there in verse 6 he said, "Surely every man walketh in a vain show." We pretend like we're something. We think that we're somebody, but the end of our life will be like the end of everyone else's. We will meet the Lord in judgment. And we will see the Lord in eternity, whether we're with him or separated from him. So he doesn't ask to die like Job did. He just asks, "Well, how long is it going to be?" And doesn't it seem rather inconsistent that a person who professes to be weary of life and who implies that they might want to die, doesn't it seem inconsistent that they would say, "But Lord, how long have I got? Have I got a few more years?" Well, it is somewhat inconsistent, but isn't that the course of humanity? Aren't we all inconsistent about some things and about things like this perhaps? So, in verse 7, "Lord, with life being what it is, then what is my hope? What is my hope?" And the answer is that there is always hope with God. This same psalmist wrote more about this and about his great confidence. Yes, he was going through a terrible time because of some sin that he had committed. But listen to what else he said. Psalm 27 and verse 10. "When my father and my mother forsake me, then the Lord shall take me up." Think about that. Could you imagine your mother or father turning against you? Now, I know there are some in this world with unnatural affection, the Bible calls it, which has reference to, amongst other things, a parent that has no love for a child. But could you imagine your father and your mother turning against you, abandoning you? Well, David felt like that it was real. But he said, "Even if my father and my mother abandon me," paraphrasing, "the Lord will lift me up." Psalm 142 and verse 4. "I looked on my right hand and beheld, but there was no man that would know me. Refuge failed me. No man cared for my soul." No man cared for my soul. But what about the Lord? The Lord did. And David knew it. And David placed his hope in that fact. So then the psalmist here, he ends his complaint by throwing himself into the arms of God's divine mercy. Again, verse 7 there. "And now, Lord, what wait I for? My hope is in thee." Those aren't words of rebellion. Those are words of trust. They're words of trust. He would trust the Lord. Number 3, look at the pardon that he seeks to find. Verses 8 through 13. "Deliver me from all my transgressions, and make me not the reproach of the foolish. I was dumb. I opened not my mouth because thou didst it. Remove thy stroke away from me. I am consumed by the blow of thine hand. When thou with rebukes dost correct man for iniquity, thou makest his beauty to consume away like a moth. Surely every man is vanity, Selah. Hear my prayer, O Lord, and give ear unto my cry. Hold not thy peace at my tears, for I am a stranger with thee and a sojourner as my fathers were. O spare me that I may recover strength before I go hence and be no more. Lord, let me recover before I'm called upon to leave. He had no sooner thrown himself upon the mercy of God that he mentions his sin. And this goes back to Psalm 38. Realizing that he is being punished for some sin, he asks, he begs to be vindicated in the eyes of those that foolishly mock him. There were people that were accusing David and hoping for his failure and his demise. And David is praying not to be restored just for his benefit, but so that his enemies would not be able to attack the integrity of God. And so his prayer is for himself, but not just for himself, but for God's honor. You remember when the children of Israel had sinned so grievously at the foot of Mount Sinai in Exodus chapter 32? And we read that God had decided to destroy the Israelites. And Moses begged and pleaded, "Oh, these people that you brought up out of Egypt, what would the other nations say? You brought up your people so you could destroy them?" And he reasons with God and says, destruction is not the appropriate response here. God punished those that were the ringleaders in all of this. But Moses was a mediator for the people. And David knows that he has a mediator as well. He knows that his punishment came from the Lord, verse 11. He knows that it's well deserved. And knowing that helped him to keep silence in the presence of the wicked. When I know that I'm suffering the consequences of my own actions, and let me back up and rephrase that. When I admit that my suffering are the consequences of my own actions, I realize that I cannot blame the Lord for what I'm enduring if I caused it myself. And David knew that some of the problems he had in his life stemmed back to those things that he had done. So he mentions his tears here. Mentioning his tears is a special appeal to God's divine pity. We find that the Lord responded to the tears of people. When Jesus was here upon the earth, he came upon the widow of Nain and her son that had died. And the Bible said, when he saw her, he had compassion upon her and said, "Weep not." Her tears bothered him. Luke 7:13. In John 20 and verse 15, when Jesus came to Mary Magdalene and she was weeping uncontrollably, Jesus said, "Woman, why weepest thou?" And technically he knew why she was. But what he was telling her was, stop weeping. There is no reason for this. Jesus knew that he was going to raise Lazarus, but he was concerned over her tears. In Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 7, we read this about Jesus, who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears. Jesus. With strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death and was heard and that he feared. So Jesus responded to the tears of people. The Father responded to the tears of the Son, and many faithful servants have received the same type or category of response. Psalm 6 and verse 6, David again talking about his affliction. He said, "I am weary with my growing. All the night I make my bed to swim. I water my couch with my tears." David was going through a terrible time. Well, that's depressing, you say. No, it's not. It's not depressing at all. Because we know how David was ultimately blessed of the Lord and delivered by the Lord. And we know what a special place David had in the eyes of the Lord. And if David says that, and it was given us by inspiration, what do you think it's there for? To encourage us to remember in times of trial, sadness, and disappointment that we have a hope, and that our hope is in the Lord, and that we turn to Him like David did here. Psalm 56 and verse 8, this is an interesting verse. He said, "Thou tellest my wanderings." In other words, you know my wanderings. You know who I am and what I do. But listen to what he said. "Put thou my tears into thy bottle. Are they not in thy book?" Put my tears into thy bottle. During this period of time, putting tears in a bottle would indicate that these were tears that were being preserved as a keepsake and remembrance of a loved one who had shed those tears. Now, that seems like an odd tradition to us today, but to them it wasn't. And so this whole verse means that God notices and remembers the trials and sacrifices that His servants experience for His sake. What about old Hezekiah? Hezekiah turned his face to the wall, Isaiah 38, 2 and 3, and prayed unto the Lord and said, "Remember now, O Lord, I beseech thee, how I walk before thee in truth and with a perfect heart, and have done that which is good in thy sight." And Hezekiah wept sore. What did God do? He sent Isaiah back in to tell him that he was going to have 15 more years. 2 Kings 20 and verse 5. Hezekiah's tears moved God to have a special pity for him. Maybe we haven't shed enough tears for our sins and for our shortcomings. David was a man after God's own heart. He wasn't afraid to weep before the Lord, to admit his mistakes and his shortcomings, and to beg and to plead for God's forgiveness. We should not be so proud that we could not do the same. He said in verse 12, "I'm a stranger with thee and a sojourner as all my fathers were." Hebrews 13 and verse 14 says, "Here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come." We are sojourners here as well, as David said. Hebrews 11 and verse 13, "These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned." He's talking about the Israelites going back to Egypt. "But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly, wherefore God is not ashamed to call them, to be called rather, their God, for He hath prepared for them a city." Abraham could have gone back to Ur of the Chaldees. Children of Israel could have gone back down into Egypt over and over again. But the faithful that are mentioned in Hebrews 11 were people that were looking for the heavenly city that God has prepared. We sing a song, "Where could I go but to the Lord?" You know, it would be almost as if David wrote that song. "Where could I go but to the Lord? Lord, these enemies, they're trying to catch me. And so I'm watching my mouth. I'm guarding my tongue. I'm bridling my tongue. I'm going to be careful what I say in front of them. But I have some questions for you. How long am you going to let this go on? How long am I going to live? Am I going to recover? Please forgive me so that I can recover and will. Where could I go but to the Lord?" How do you feel? How do you feel when enduring the consequences of some sin, if you can tie the two of them together? Who do you blame for your problems? Where do you turn when every road seems like it's a dead end? Psalm 39 has the answer. The answer is, on those dark days. I had a teacher tell us one day, he said, "Never make decisions on your blue days." Why did he say that? Because there's going to be some bright, sunny days. Like Clifton said today, beautiful day. Enjoyed it. There's going to be some beautiful days, but there's going to be some blue days, some gloomy days. Where are we going to turn? We need to ask the question, how did I get in this place? Is it my fault? Is it the course of life? Things happen. Bad things do happen to good people because we live in a natural world and because Adam and Eve brought sin into this world. So sometimes we're going to suffer because of the sins of other people. Sometimes we're going to suffer because of our sins. But will we look in the mirror and be honest enough to admit when it is on us? David was. Then where do we turn? We turn to the Lord. That's where our hope is. That's where our help is. I hope that you will turn to the Lord tonight if you haven't already. If you've never obeyed the gospel of Christ, I hope that you would do that. If you have but you haven't been living faithfully, I hope that you'll turn back to the Lord. He's promised to receive you. We're illustrated with open arms. He's there for you tonight. If you have that need, would you come as we stand and as we sing?